Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the Amazon Alexa. For today's podcast, we're joined by the CEO and COO of the award-winning craft ready-to-drink company, Ace and Freak. So we have with us today Tom Sodden. Tom, thank you much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having us, Jonathan.
And we also have Chris Davis, the COO. Chris, thank you very much for being with us.
Likewise. Good morning.
So we're speaking together today primarily because you're currently on Cedars, undertaking a £250,000 raise to fund further growth for Ace and Freak. Now, this is something that we're going to be doing on a regular basis in 2021, and we've been discussing numerous companies through 2020, and we'll get into the finer details of the crowdfunding pitch and details of that a bit later on. But to get started, can we have a bit of background on Ace and Freak and where you are at the moment in your life cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ace and Freak really came around from a gap I saw in the market. I was a consultant for some of the world's biggest drinks agencies and doing a lot of trend forecasting, etc. And I saw this gap in the market really based upon global F&B macro trends of convenience, quality and conscientiousness, and the product fitted in quite well. We initially launched the product in 2018 and did various rounds of market testing to develop the product to where it is now. And we've kind of grown it steadily. We were due to launch nationwide in 2020, and then coronavirus happened. So we kind of scaled back and really refined the business as such, and got to a really good place now, and now preparing ourselves to scale in a new COVID-friendly format.
Fantastic. So, you know, Ace and Freak started in 2017. I mean, you've mentioned COVID there, and, you know, of course, so looking at the crowdfunding page, there's a focus on events. I mean, we're going to be looking forward, of course, past COVID. But just before we do that, would you be able to just give some sort of perspective of how different 2020 was compared to your expectations of 2020 going into it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a very unique sales strategy where we seed the product alongside relevant brands or events so that we can introduce consumers to it, to showcase the brand value to a consumer by being placed around, a Beats headphones event with a famous artist. It gives the impression of quality because of that association. Moving into 2020, we were due to be in 40 music festivals, and we probably had in excess of around 100,000 units pre-sold through that. As we then moved into 2020, naturally all of that changed. And what we ended up doing was we pivoted quite substantially. Naturally, we didn't have that low-hanging fruit from the music festivals, but what we found was a lot of our partners from the world of music festivals and with regards to brand partners, they continued to run events. So we were working with some of our festival partners doing street food markets. We were working with people like Secret Cinema for their drive-through events. So actually what we generally found was that, and this is one of the benefits of having a ready-to-drink product, all you need is a bucket of ice. You don't need a bar. You don't need skilled staff. So it's feasible to take it anywhere. So what we found was, although the terrain had changed slightly, the direction was still the same.
Fantastic. So that's obviously a good overview of the wider market. But can we just drill down now into the specifics of the ready-to-drink product and particularly the Ace and Freak products and what sort of sets you apart from the existing options on the market?
Yeah, so I mean, the easiest way to look at our product is the ready-to-drink category is led by the likes of WKD, Smirnoff Ice, Bacardi Breezy. You know, it typically had its heyday in the 1990s. What we are now starting to see and what we are moving in the direction on, what we plan to lead, is the craft segmentation of this category. So just in the same way that we saw a regular lager turn into craft beer, we are taking those same principles. So elements of provenance, transparency on the ingredients that we use, a higher quality of the ingredients we use, and a much better flavor profile. Couple that with quite disruptive branding, and you have very similar characteristics that have proven growth in craft beer, tonic water, with the likes of Fevertree, etc., and in coffee.
Okay, so you've won some awards for your cocktail drinks. What sort of flavor can consumers expect from you?
Sure. So we are different to a lot of the current products available. The majority of ready-to-drink cocktails mimic regular bar cocktails, and we've moved away from that quite specifically because we want to disassociate a direct visual representation of that product, because it will always come second best. So there's never the perceived value. If you have a mojito in a can or a mojito in a glass, the glass is always going to be better. So each of our flavors, which is mint and elderflower spritz, ginger and lemongrass mule, and watermelon cucumber sangria, are designed around the key flavors which influence a consumer's decision-making strategy. So in the past, I've probably written over 300 different cocktail menus and analyzed the data from those. And by understanding what drinks are repeatedly being purchased, then cross-analyzing those recipes alongside recipes from other bars, you then get a good picture of what these key flavors are. And that's kind of what our flavors are based around.
Okay. So I just want to look forward now to the next year, and in particular, your revenue generation strategies, because of course we're in the midst of a lockdown at the moment, so of course events are off, but that may change. I mean, what are your plans? On raising funds. You know, once you've raised the funds, to really drive forward revenue growth, and how do you think that could change as we go through the year, given the uncertainty around COVID-19?
Well, I think this is one of the benefits of being a smaller, agile company. You know, in terms of our product development, we can develop a product between 4 to 6 weeks in a turnaround time. Most businesses are looking at 12 to 18 months. And, you know, in terms of the sales channels, we've got a very diverse range. You know, in the past 18 months, prior to COVID hitting, we did a lot of analysis in different sales channels to ascertain rate of sale, monitoring how well the product did very closely. So our key focus for this year is localized sales, and localized through convenience. This is a great product for a spontaneous purchase, and we have an owned route to market that specifically targets convenience. We will be doing a major push into our direct-to-consumer element, which really, really took off during COVID, and that is able to service Europe wide. And another unique opportunity that we have is export. And we're actually currently in discussions with 5 different export markets: USA, Japan, Singapore, and we've just secured Nigeria as well. And all of these provide excellent opportunities, both for D2C in these local areas, for events in these local areas, and for, especially in some of the hotter countries, for outdoor drinking occasions.
Okay, so I think it's a very interesting point for investors. You've mentioned they're looking at exports, and we've just had the Brexit trade agreement pushed through. I mean, how are you finding the landscape at the moment?
in terms of export.
I think
what's quite interesting is that when you look at the, you know, the kind of global trends around F&B, you know, the UK is still highly influential, especially when it comes to drinks. You know, we're market leaders in a wealth of different areas. You know, Diageo, the world's largest alcohol company, is a British company. We've London Dry Gin, Scotch, etc. So there is a desire for UK brands and UK products. So there is definitely an appetite for it. We also in the UK have the most advanced cocktail industry. You know, in terms of the quality of the bars that we have in here in the UK, it's at the highest level. So that has created this ecosystem of quite cutthroat competition, which is what has forged us. So that when we then move into other markets, I mean, a great example, we talk about being award-winning. We recently entered a competition called the Cannes Challenge, which is based over in the US, 5 different countries, over 60 competitors, and we were named best in class. You know, first time we went over to America and we won. So what we're generally tend to find is that, you know, this, the environment at which we have grown, which is the most cutthroat, when we then move outside of this, we have this unfair advantage against the competition.
Mm-hmm. And
fantastic.
Just to add to that from my side. Just to add to that from my side. So going back slightly to the event question, I think the events obviously were a large part of our sales in the past sort of year. Or previous to prior to COVID, and that was kind of out of two things: the network we had within, you know, the music and festival world, and secondly, where we wanted to see our product. Now, that as a channel is one channel; it just happened to be our where we were pushing our time and effort to focus on, and it was doing well. So then COVID hit, and obviously we had to change, and that was look at several other channels and how we could access those and start to win a couple of those areas. So I think given the situation we were in, events was very important and will continue to be important as it comes back, touch wood. But I think our ability as a product, if we strip it back to its basics, is we're a highly adaptable product that can be drunk absolutely anywhere. And for any occasion, a restaurant, in a bar, in a field, on a train, on a boat, wherever you want to be, it's a product that we're able to consume, you know, as better ingredients, flavors, combinations, product, you know, methods of production improve, and the ways to increase that reach and accessibility to that product, you know, this the channels are sort of endless, and where we can place it and what we can do, there really is no limit. I think touching on exports the UK itself is a vast market. It is as Tom was saying, it's, you know, you could say we're the home of alcohol, at least some, you know, very established brands in that market. But you know, there's a lot of value in the UK for the RTD market. I think it's expected to be about 700 million a market size within the next sort of 5 years, and that itself is, you know, prime to sort of for picking for those brands that are willing to meet the consumer needs. And it's around not only flavors, but brands and sort of our ethical standpoint, our conscience. And that's one of the benefits as a startup and where we're at now and kind of where society is. We understand the importance of having those sustainable, ethical, cultural ingrained into what we're doing. So I think it's, in terms of the UK as a market itself, to begin with, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, and those brands that position themselves to meet the needs of the consumer will do well and succeed. And then looking at exports, as Tom said, you know, we're already speaking with distributors in Nigeria off the back of the awards. We're speaking with people in the US. There's a lot of opportunity there, in Japan and Singapore as well that we're exploring. So it's a mixed bag, I think. It's you know, winning our home territory and then looking at sort of the areas we can sort of test and place the product in where we see fit.
Thank you. So good. I just want to move on now to how delivering your plan. So you're looking for a 250,000 target for a convertible round on Cedars. And I will mention that anybody that's looking for further details, do check out the notes to this podcast, because you'll be able to find a link through to the Ace and Freak page on Cedars. But investors will be very interested to know the specifics in terms of the allocations of funds and what you're going to be spending that money on to deliver your strategy. So would you be able to give us a bit of a breakdown on that?
Yeah, sure. So we've created a product without compromise as initial point, because, you know, as the founders of Innocent say, you can sell one drink by its looks, you can sell 100 by its taste. So what was really important from the get-go was to produce a product that sat right with us. And it sat right with us both in terms of the flavor, in terms of the sustainability that we used, in terms of the conscientiousness that, with regards to the sourcing, the ingredients, etc. So from that, what that meant was that we had a very, very clear roadmap on what scale we were able to obtain a profit margin to allow us to organically grow. And this is where this market's quite interesting, because it's quite prohibitive to get into. I mean, the likes of hard seltzers are very easy. There's, you know, very quick and easy high margins to be made. Yet with regards to ready-to-drink cocktail, when you're using fresh fruit ingredients, you then need to obtain a scale. And this is what we've been doing for the past 18 months, is preparing ourselves to that. So the key for us is to scale our production, which in turn reduces our cost of goods by 53%. So it's a huge amount. To support this growth, we're then bolstering this with a new full-time designer. The reason for this is that, you know, content is king in this world of direct to consumer, and with our customer base being predominantly millennials and future Gen Zs, this is really important to us, and to create very, very high value content, which is then applicable not just in the UK, but also for our export markets. And then supporting with a full-time sales member who's going to be supporting our UK distributor and kind of being a face of our customers. And I think this is something, you know, I own two bars myself, and, you know, especially when it comes to traders, it's still very much a people business, and you want to work with good people. So for us to be able to support our customers with this full-time salesperson is a very important part. But that 250,000 will then get us to a place where we can start to grow organically. We're starting to get a lot of interest from some of the institutional investors, and I think for us now, it's about kind of just pushing our head above the water and beyond where our current competitors are, to enable us to grow, and really to start to capitalize on the market. You know, when you look at the likes of craft beer, it's dominated by one company, and I'm probably not need to tell you what company that is, but they have the top. They have the biggest selling beer, third best selling beer, and fourth best selling beer, and you know. When you look at the cocktail RTD market, and it's forecast to grow 20% compound annual growth rate for the next, well, up till 2020, you know, we want to be at the front of this herd.
Okay, so I mean, sort of looking at, you know, further down the line in terms of where you see that the business going, you touched on other companies within the industry, and you know, anybody that follows the industry will know what their story's been and where they've come from and where they are now. But I mean, where do you see this going in terms of, you know, in a business perspective? You know, investors will be wanting to know, I mean, do you see this as a business that could be potentially sort of taken over, or do you see this sort of growing, as you say, organically and sort of really having that brand sort of standalone and a standalone business, and who would you make comparisons to in terms of, you know, sort of large M&A deals that have been taking place recently?
I mean, you know what, I think it's a very interesting market. I mean, you know, our cold drinks have the highest exit multiples of any consumer good at 17.6. What's really interesting is when you look at the detail of that. I mean, craft segmentation is really interesting, because it's a very desirable area to move into, and a lot of the larger brands want to move into that, you know, and as a result of that, you know, craft beer averages, the 2020 average exit was 31.9 times EBITDA. You know, when we look at aspirational businesses, you know, we look at other F&B industries that have had craft segmentation that has caused rapid kind of cannibalization of market share within their market, but also total market growth. Craft beer, tonic water, coffee, you know, craft beer, great example of that. BrewDog, you know, one of the first early adapters to craft beer, you know, they did very well. They didn't sell out early on. I think they're worth about 1.3 billion now. Another great example of that is Fevertree, you know, and both of these, you know, craft segmentations are very similar to what we're doing in the fact that you're taking a product that consumers are familiar with. You know, the ready to drink, you know, a gin and tonic in a can, a Bacardi Breeze or Smirnoff Ice. This has been around for a long time. They're integrated into to people's lives, and it's a premiumization of that. It's aligning to what the market data is saying, what the, you know, what the reports are saying, is that, you know, want better quality and stuff like that. We are starting to see M&As in the category. AB InBev, one of the world's largest brewers, is proactively pursuing this category, both in terms, they purchased a company called Cutwater Spirits in the US for an undisclosed sum, quite a substantial sum, it's believed.
Which we beat in the latest competition, which was a nice win.
Sorry?
I said, which we beat in the latest, the best in class RTD cocktail, Cutwater Spirits.
We did beat them. So M&As are starting to occur within the industry. I was on a call with the marketing director of one of the top four breweries recently, and in his opinion, he believed that the craft ready-to-drink market will be larger than the craft beer market. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, RTD market is forecast to grow faster than the total alcohol market for the next 5 years. I mean, it's currently growing three times faster. This explosive growth is going to just increase the appetite of the larger companies for M&As. But at the same time, it's, you know, I think for us, the thing that we're focusing on, yes, there are ample opportunities for exit. I think for us, it's to really, really grow this business to a position where we can see the full potential of this market. And that's the really exciting thing, because at the moment there's no glass roof on this. This is not a stagnant market. This is growing rapidly.
Yeah. And just to add on top of that. Sorry, mate. Yeah, I think so this is at the present recent reports, you know, this is a $20 billion market. So for anyone who's not really understanding or heard what RTDs are, it's huge, it's vast. And you know,
That's cocktail RTDs, 20 that's billion cocktail. Exactly. And this is not RTDs as a whole. You know, this is cocktail RTDs.
Yeah. So it's not the RTD teas, coffees, or anything else you can put into a ready-to-drink format, but it's specifically on cocktails. And that market is expected to grow, you know, compounded annually 20% for the next 10 years. So this is what the reports are saying. And I think the other factors you've got to include, I think you look at developing, you spoke about exports, but if you look at developing countries and the sort of burgeoning middle class looking for access to those premium products, who may not have access or skill set or equipment to produce, you know, the best products that meet and brands that are going to meet these consumer needs can, you know, will ride this wave. And I think we're taking a position where we're very much, you know, this, we've tested the product, we've built a team, we've got the knowledge internally to help drive this. And I think we're looking at the best way to meet the needs of our target consumers, which are, you know, predominantly the millennials and Gen Z population. So looking at how we can serve those people best and also, you know, grow on this wave of growth to a point where, yes, they're, you know, we're not looking at exit now, but the exits, the kind of exits that craft breweries and beverage companies are seeing are mega and sort of top end of industry expectations. So it's an exciting time, a very exciting market. We've got a very, you know, award-winning product we're very, very proud of, and we're in a position to sort of, yeah, begin to ride that wave, and sky's the limit.
So just to finish off now, Investors Week will be keen to know the key milestones that you'll be setting yourself to attack. As you mentioned there, the 20 billion market in the cocktail RTDs. I mean, what have you set yourself as key targets over the next 5 years and milestones?
Sure.
So, go on, Tom.
Do you want to go, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, initially, one big target, I think, is you know, hitting a million sales. I think getting that many cans in hands is something we intend to reach. And I think once that, you know, you kind of hit those volume of sales, that's, you're on your way. So that's an initial milestone.
And in terms of market share within the UK, we are going to look to obtain about 1% of the RTD market between years 3 to 4. You know, it's currently, it was 2018, it was 146 million. You know, so there's ample room to grow. And I think for us within the craft segmentation, you know, we're aiming that 1%. And I think it's going to be quite interesting to see how the market evolves. Another key thing for us is by year 3, we want to be credited as a B Corp. You know, this is a very ethical business, and, you know, we are very passionate. You know, since we started, we've cut our carbon footprint as a business by a third, and we'll continue to do so. And by when we scale production, we're able to reduce it even further. So, you know, we are, you know, in terms of our goals, we're really focusing on all three P's, because I think, you know, creating that ecosystem of positive impact with the people that we're working with the planet and profit, you know, the people and the planet, you know, you get that right, I believe that it really, really leads into that profit segment. You know, but as I said, 1% of market share by year 3 to 4, and B Corp by year 3. Is really key to us. And we're really excited to see how this craft segmentation grows, because, you know, as we've all seen, I think, you know, you just need to go into your local supermarket. The change on the shelf within the last 12 months, and from having very little presence to now having full shelves of hard seltzers and, you know, mixed drinks in cans, that's really where it's quite exciting. But as I said, 1% through 4, and B Corp by year 3.
Fantastic. That's great. Tom and Chris, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. No worries.
So, as a reminder, there in the podcast notes, there will be a link through to the Seeders page, which has further details on the ASIN Freak crowdfunding campaign. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.